Off the ball with BetDak.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sport 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.
Well, I want to bring you right back into a very positive frame of mind then, Keith, because we had a brilliant bit of commentary as Connacht stormed to victory in somewhat controversial, not really, circumstances at the end of the game against Wasps at the weekend. Have a listen to this.
The tension unbearable. Here comes Jack Carty. He's turning away. He's punched the air. Oh, it's over. Jack Carty has nailed it. And Connacht have won this game. Oh, absolute.
Look at it.
Pandemonium at the front. It's a full-scale pitch invasion.
Come on.
Greatest moments in college rugby history, despite what's gone on here over the last 12 months. The Pro 12 champions have managed to beat Watts with the final kick of the game.
This is a throwback. There is not a hint of a steward stopping anybody running onto the pitch. It's bloody carnage out there, as it should be. This is an incredible result. They were out of the game. They got rucked off the game for the whole match. They were barely inside of the Wasps half for the whole second half, and when they get the one chance that they need to have, they keep the composure, they score the try, and the much maligned Carty, after last week kicking not so well, bends it over into the breeze from the right hand touchline. Phenomenal.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy kick at all, but for somebody under the circumstances that he's in at the moment, where there's a lot of talk about his kicking, where he's self-conscious about his kicking, to just get up there and go, right, the game is entirely on the line here, and in some respects a bit of the season is on the line, boom.
Yeah, for him and for Connacht, he was averaging, I think, something around about the 55% mark place kicking going into the game. He admits it's not the strongest aspect to his game, but he also knew he was the only goal kicker still standing all week long. Went down to Dublin, I think, and spent an hour or two with Richie Murphy, which he found very valuable, as well as another hour or two with Eric Elwood on the Friday. And I was speaking to him afterwards, and he said that the big lesson he learned from Richie Murphy was to learn from why, as he struck them, if he struck the first one wide, which he did, what he'd done wrong, and to understand how he had to rectify for the ensuing kicks. He then got one from outside the 10-metre line, which Jimmy Goppert missed, hit the post, I think, from the exact same position, more or less, in the second half. In fairness to Jack Carty, the sports ground is one of the most fiendishly difficult grounds in Europe for a place kicker. I'm told that, for example, Craig Ronaldson averages in the high 80%, but it's up in the 90s away from the sports ground.
Right.
It's down the 70s when he's in the sports ground. It's just that capricious wind is such a difficult factor. But anyway, he nailed the kicks, and then the pressure one comes on. In some respects, it might have been better that it was out by the touchline. It was like, if he hadn't nailed that one, nobody would have really criticise him too much, whereas it had been, say, 10 or 15 yards to the right of the post, he would have been expected to get it. It might have even been more pressure in that stand. But what was really pleasing was he's such a nice lad, and he's a homegrown indigenous product of Marist College and Buccaneers and the Academy and the Connacht system, and he is a very nice lad, and he's a very talented footballer in lots of respects. So hopefully this will prove a bit of a turning point for him as well as Connacht in their season.
Yeah, Keith, the joy, the abandon of the pitch invasion, it's a suggestion that something special has occurred in Connacht rugby over the last period of time, and it's continuing, it's rolling on.
It is. I mean, I said it at the end of the commentary, that was my first time in Connacht since I've played in Connacht. At a game, we have never been up there on off the ball for matches where I've been around, and I haven't had the chance, and I kind of wanted to go up when it was a big day, and then I didn't get up, and you know, those sort of things, they don't happen. And I went into the ground looking at it, and I remembered it from times past, and it's an interesting ground. It's a lovely sense of character that was inside there. But you could hear it in our commentary at the end. It was just lunacy. I mean, everybody just peeled straight in over the fence, straight into the middle of the field. I saw a couple of stewards running in, not to stop people, but running in to kind of jump around the players as well. It was just, I called it a throwback because it reminded me of, I think, of the reasons that people love sport, which is the underdog. It is that sense of community and the closeness from the supporters to the players. There was an incredible innocence to the whole thing, and I don't mean that in any sort of condescending way or anything like that. I felt privileged to be there. It was that sort of a day. It was lovely. It was a cracking day. The reasons you love sport was encapsulated in that last few minutes. And in fairness to Carthy, he had said afterwards that he wouldn't have got blamed if he'd missed that kick. And he and Jerry touched on that as well. And I remember thinking that for Ron Nogara years and years and years ago, that the ones that he wasn't expected to put over were the ones that he felt there was no pressure on, he could bang them over. The ones that were in front of the post were much harder when his kicking wasn't right or when his head wasn't right. They were far more stressful to do. And this one, it was a very strange wind. The wind was blowing the wrong way for the sports grounds, and it looked difficult all the time into that breeze. But from the second he kicked it, and which we didn't say in commentary for anybody who's watched it, the second he kicked the ball, he turned around and ran back to the halfway line. He knew it was over. It was a pure strike. And, you know, they were well beaten for the whole game until the last second when it counted.
Yeah, and that's a hugely important thing. There's a resilience in the team that hasn't been dissipated by the announcement that Pat Lam is leaving. And we're looking for signs to see what the response of the players are going to be, because it's a relatively unusual situation, although I suspect it's a bit more common in rugby than other sports. And they needed something like that just to make sure that, okay, so nothing bad is happening at the moment.
You're absolutely right. Had they lost two in a row to us, no matter, or even drawn the second one, it wouldn't have had quite the same feel-good factor that it does now as they take into the Christmas derbies. This is the most taxing period of Connacht's season. It was always going to be more difficult for them, balancing being competitive in the Champions Cup and remaining competitive in the Pro 12. They just don't have the size of squad. And then you throw in 19 injuries. The build-up they had to last week, they had one training session where players started to drop down like flies, and Pat Lam had to call it off with 10 minutes left. So that was their preparation. It was largely done in the video room and homework on their laptops. Very, very truncated preparation for that game. And they don't have anything like the resources of Wasps or Toulouse. So to be in a three-way tie and 13 points is quite phenomenal. I thought there was plenty of evidence in the first performance that Pat Lam's announcement hadn't really affected the squad at all. In some respects, I think I might have said at the time that week in the show, Joe, that having Wasps back-to-back immediately after that announcement was in a sense no bad thing, because they just had to focus their minds. The games demanded as much as now do the Christmas derbies and then the return to Europe in the new year. So the show will go on, I've no doubt about that. And I think you're right, all the signs are now, thanks to that win, even more so, the show will go on.
Yeah, and dramatic wins like that, dramatic scenes like the pitch invasion, Keith, they help when it comes to recruitment. That's, you know, this is an exciting team to be involved in. There's a real thing going.
As was reaching the last eight of the Champions Cup, that would be huge for recruitment.
Yeah, it would be huge for them. And there is the sense, you know, I still felt all last year that they wouldn't get to win the trophy and the Pro 12. I felt it was, we were almost watching Leicester and Connacht in Mirror last year, and again a bit of it this year, though not as bad for Connacht, to be honest. There is a great sense up there. There's a great sense of joy before the game, a little bit of trepidation. They are suffering a little bit with the loss of Robbie Henshaw. I feel that there's too much pressure on Bundy Aki to do everything, and in many respects the chanting up there is all to do with Bundy, because he is the one that they're hanging their hat on this year. And they do suffer a little bit in the forwards, not having some of the depth that they had last year, and that balance is not quite the same. So they were suffering for a huge amount of the game. And surprising, the amount of turnovers that they gave away was incredibly surprising, and yet they got the win at the end. So that, you know, that there's something there, something very special there. And whether it's able to sustain that over a difficult Christmas period, over a Six Nations period where there'll be players in the squad and elements of that just shows you the resilience it's going to be to back it up season to season. That's very tough for them, I think.
Yeah, they kind of need to qualify on their own merits as well from the Pro 12 for the Champions Cup next year, just to make sure that this is a long-term evolutionary thing.
Which is going to be a very difficult thing to do, given the strength of the other three Irish provinces, given that the Scarlets are there, the Ospreys are better than they were last year, Glasgow are there, Cardiff are a much stronger unit this year. It's a more competitive Pro 12, yeah, on top of this campaign in Europe, which is a little bit like Leicester. You see what's happened to their domestic league form, because the Champions Cup is such a new novelty for them. They're so excited about that, and it's tough to balance the two if you're a relatively small organisation or club compared to others. But that being said, you know, they've re-signed Alton Deland, Bundy Aki, Tom McCartney, others. There's been a lot of good news coming out of there. Just listening to Keith there, I'm thinking as well, the sports ground has become like almost a smaller down version of Thomond Park. Yeah. It's got an X factor to it now. They've pulled through some big, big wins in the second half of last season all the way through to this season. We think of Munster have been scalped there, Leinster, Ulster this season, Glasgow twice, Toulouse, now Wasps.
Yeah.
And the vibes are not good in terms of the negotiations there in terms of redeveloping the ground, and they might have to move, which would be an awful shame now just when they're getting this. They've got to get the next coaching appointment right.
Yeah.
And they've got to get this ground decision right as well, because the fact that it's a walk up from Galway.
Nathan makes that point actually anytime we talk to him about Galway. Yeah. There's a professional team doing its thing really well in the city centre, and it's a very unique thing, and if they tamper with that, it could ruin things pretty quickly. I want to move on and talk about the Leicester-Munster rematch. In many ways, Keith, we obviously expected that there would be a backlash from Leicester, and yet Munster were within 45 seconds really of seeing that off and doing the double and coming away from Welford Road with the win. Afterwards, Razzy Rasmus said he actually thought that Leicester deserved the win because they'd played better, but I'm not entirely sure that I mean, if they'd won the game, I think he would have been pretty comfortable with the quality of performance that most of the team put in over the 80 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit lacking in the energy that was there the previous week. And if you look at what Munster have done over the last couple of months, it has been very, very high on energy. And whether you're waiting for that to kind of dissipate somewhat when you play away from home. But I think Munster were a little bit off the mark for the game. And yet, again, having said that, they get themselves into a position where they get the score at the end. They need to be able to close that game out. And whether it was going a little bit too far or going infield when maybe they should have gone down the blind side a little bit more. But there is a need to be able to close that out. And, you know, on such unbelievably close, fine margins, do games like that hang? Because you'd look around where you are in the field and you'd say, yeah, I can take a little bit more of a risk here maybe, or we can go a bit further up because you're so far away and you're in the opposition half, and it's fine because if you make a mistake there you can still have plenty of time to do it. And then Williams steps up, and like that was a joke. We were kind of sitting freezing in the showground trying to look at this on a phone, and just before we were going on air, and you're just saying, oh yeah, well that's okay anyway, sure, that's
not
too far
no back. Chance of making
he,
that
will he you know will he kick where is he going to go oh no he's going to go for it god he wouldn't have the legs for that, you know. And you just know it yourself, and maybe whether that was drifting into the heads of the players on the field, because these are the like that would have been absolutely invaluable for Munster, and the wish is that they won't rue it going forward, but they make things a little bit more difficult for them.
Yeah, there was a couple of missed kicks.
It's funny you should say that, because the previous week Jack Cardy had missed 2 3-pointers away to Wasps, and they were at significant moments in the match. Could have put them ahead at half time, could have got them level with 20 minutes to go. And there was two phases in the game. Munster were 6-0 up against 14 men, and they didn't press home their advantage, made a few mistakes, and Tyler Blaindown missed a couple of kicks as well.
Yeah.
And in a tight, low scoring arm wrestle like that, you can't really afford a couple of 3-pointers missed away from home.
There were two kicks out on the full as well, a big one by Blaindell that just missed, and also one by Conor Murray, which was kind of unusual.
They were pounding the line that time, and I think it was Jack O'Toole threw out a pass out wide which didn't go to hand to Darren Sweetman, and they break up field and Simon Zeebo incurs the yellow card, and that felt like a big pivotal moment. There were moments, I think Munster in the review today, they're reviewing the match this afternoon before they went out in the training pitch, they would be kicking themselves because although they made errors and they weren't as accurate as they had been in previous weeks, the scrum didn't go as well, but the maul went well. There was enough there for them to have got an away win, which would have left them and Glasgow in total charge of this pool, with in all likelihood both of them now qualifying for the last eight. That might well still happen, but they've given Leicester a life, and they've got two of the last three away from home, including a very tricky tie away to Glasgow. It would be interesting to see how they respond, because you know, there has been a lot of emotion, as Keith said, in the 7-match winning run post the loss of Anthony Foley. They've been incredibly accurate up until then, quite clinical. They weren't in Welford Road in a different pressurised atmosphere. And Thomond Park, they will really want to front up, because they didn't front up against Leinster earlier this season. I would imagine that the likes of Dunica Ryan, Peter Omani, CJ Stander, Conor Murray, Simon Zeebo, Keith Earls will play this one, and maybe not the next one 5 days later against Connacht away, because then they've got three European Cup matches in a row. So I think it's going to be quite an epic arm wrestle again with Leinster and Thomond Park and a record attendance.
Yeah, it's kind of the perfect fixture, Keith, to follow this up, right?
Yeah, it's a big fixture, and you know, we have this conversation every year whether these are big games or not big games. They are, because you're looking for momentum all the time, and you are because you want to make certain that you're in the Champions Cup next year by right, and so you need to try and get all these wins away. And you absolutely want to, if you're Munster, to play to a full house in Thomond Park and to win in Thomond Park. And I think it does become important then in terms of your selection. And it is one of the quandaries that sits within Irish rugby that doesn't sit within the other countries, which are, you have to manage your players. There is influence coming from Joe Schmidt and the Irish coaching panel as to what players need to be rested where and when. And that makes it a little bit more difficult. And you also have to remember that you have huge games coming again. And it's tricky. And it's funny how we bemoaned the standard of the Pro 12 over the last, well, for years and years and years, and it got a bit better last year. I think it's been fairly radically improved this year. There's a higher level of consistency of performance. There's no real let-up. So Munster, you know, pretty much wiped the floor with Leicester and Thomond Park. They're a little bit off the mark, and that just shows you only need to be a little bit off and things don't go your way when you're playing away from home. They need to be back to that level of intensity that they had against Leicester at home.
If you're the coaching ticket and you know you have to rest your frontline players for either this game or the game in Galway, you pick the game in Galway because you've got your full house and it's against the home fans, the league leaders.
You got to front up in front of your home fans, particularly as the record sellout crowd. I think three of the four Christmas derbies are already sold out, and most likely Leinster v Ulster New Year's Eve will be one as well, particularly if, as I suspect, Leinster are going to have about 12 or 13 players in this category. They're going to be more affected than anybody.
Yeah.
And with Johnny Sexton also coming back for New Year's Eve, and you'd imagine the bulk of those 12 or 13 players being picked for that game at home, that will be a sellout as well. And therefore, it's a bit like the top 14 in microcosm, whereby your frontliners generally play the home matches. If they're going to be rested for any games, going to be away from home, and you take the hit away from home.
Yeah.
And that's why you get such a preponderance of home wins in the top 14 throughout the course of the season. This Christmas period, the festive period, is a little bit like the top 14 in microcosm, and it will be no surprise to see four home wins as a result.
But it's interesting, Jerry, isn't it, as well, that for all the anger that was levelled at Northampton at the weekend for not putting a full team out, and whereas you'd say it's a fairly pragmatic way of dealing with it when you don't have much, if any, hope of progressing out of your group. And yet we're saying the same. We believe that there needs to be chopping and changing has to be done for big games at this weekend, which is right.
I agree with you, Keith, and I think it is right that players are given a week off over the festive period, frontline Irish players, because when it comes to Six Nations, we're all going to want Ireland to have a real go at that and hopefully get to the final game in contention for the title. So we saw the benefits of the frontliners getting the last weekend of November off, whereas England's had to play another game at the end of that window against Australia. It definitely affected some of their club performances in Europe a week later. Another week off now is timely, and then another weekend off after the back-to-back Champions Cup games, and three in Munster's case.
But Jerry, it's also interesting when you look at the sort of that law of unintended consequences, that the compressing of the Champions Cup into the meritocracy, which I think we all agreed with, but the shrinking of it from 24 to 20 has pretty much meant that if you're in a wrong group, which means you don't have an Italian group in it, and you lose a couple of games, it's kind of not really worth your while for the most part to try and go out and win a couple of other ones when you're struggling in your league elsewhere. And that's pretty much the view that Northampton have taken. Even though they tried to deny it, you can't deny the fact that they were hopeless on Sunday, and you know, Leinster put them to the sword.
Two things about that, Keith, and that is that when a Leinster away team goes to Thomond Park on Stephen's Day, or Connacht front up in Ulster this Friday, and same again on New Year's Eve, you know you're still going to get four competitive away sides. They're going to turn up. Like, you know, I've seen lots of French sides patch up. Like, I remember Montauban showing up in Munster one year with a second string team. But this is an opportunity for players. You'd expect a bit of pride in the performance. Against that, if the current organ, EPCO, weren't so intent on shredding everything about the previous competition, the Heineken Cup as we knew it, that seeding, all the seeding, right throughout the whole tournament, all the ranking, was based on a 5-year coefficient on performances in Europe. They ditched that to make it entirely based on one season's performance in your domestic league. Therefore, if you're out of contention, there's absolutely no incentive to stay competitive in the pool stages, and you're going to benefit from being more competitive in your league in Europe the next season. So it's all very well for the organisers getting high and mighty about this and saying, we might have to investigate Northampton when their own rulings do nothing to encourage sides to stay competitive.
Yeah, I think that the investigation is nonsensical.
Nonsensical.
And I also kind of feel like anybody who's criticising Northampton for putting out a B team, like, it doesn't make any sense either. There's a hypocrisy involved there. So yeah. Anyway, let's move on from that because it is the, like, so there's almost nothing to talk about except how well some of the Leinster second string players played in that. Let's wait and see how well they get on over Christmas because they're going to get an opportunity as well before we anoint them just yet. But they looked really brilliant in that game. Fair play to them. Ulster was pretty much as expected. We hoped that they might be able to manufacture a losing bonus point, but
yeah,
it wasn't them for, there for them.
First try was a slightly forward pass, I thought, but never mind. When you concede a line break and a try like that to Clermont Auvergne in Stade Marcel Michelin in front of a full house inside the first minute, you're in big trouble because they're just such a momentum team at home, more so than any other team in Europe.
It's not like they didn't score a try in the first minute the last day.
Sure, but that was away from home, and Ulster had the Ravenhill crowd or the Kingspan Stadium crowd
to lean on.
I mean, having said all that, they actually clawed their way back into the game pretty well and had a conversion kick to get within bonus point territory, but it was a pretty chastening defeat. I think Clermont in the pool stages year after year after year look as good as every team in the competition.
Yeah.
It's a question of them, of course, when it comes to the knockout stages, they invariably find a way to blow it.
Yeah, okay. So it is the end of the year. We get an opportunity to look back and pick out some highlights from the year. Is there a standout player of the year for you from an Irish perspective?
Me? I suppose I'd be quite happy to select CJ Stander. Given his phenomenal level of consistency throughout the Six Nations, throughout all the games with Munster, his collection of Man of the Match awards, his phenomenal ball carrying, his poaching, part of the Chicago win, a big part of it, an integral part of that November series and what Munster have done throughout the year, I think it'd be hard to overlook CJ. Anybody gets in front of CJ deserves to win the award, put it that way.
What's his best position?
That's the beauty of him. Probably 8, but he can certainly do a fine job at 6.
Okay, right, yeah. So you think he's a natural successor to Heaslip eventually?
Yep.
Okay. Keith?
You know how much I hate lists and naming one player above another. There's a few guys I really have really enjoyed watching this year. CJ, definitely. I thought he had a cracking season. Jamie Heaslip. Mm-hmm. It's funny because we're talking about two players who often play in the same position. Jamie Heaslip had a phenomenal autumn. He just really, really played well. So Conor Murray has played very well all season, and I've enjoyed watching Rob Kearney get back into very good international form. He's played some very good stuff, and I've loved then watching all these young guys that we're seeing finally coming through. I'm saying finally, but we're seeing younger guys coming through, and I like that idea. I've loved watching the little vignettes of Carberry and the difference that he brings to the position of a guy with a different skill set and maybe a different rugby education to it. I think that there's something very enjoyable about that. I think we've had a very good year. You know, when you look at the start of it in terms of Ireland, say Six Nations were just, we suffered a bit of a jet lag after the World Cup. We didn't have to go very far, but we just weren't getting it. We're getting our act together, and I think it was almost the end of a particular style of play with the Six Nations.
Well, can we tease that out a bit? Because what we've seen since then almost bears no resemblance to the Six Nations, and certainly the conversations. Some of the criticism, the vast majority of the criticism that was levelled, for what it's worth, around the time was that the team was looking too pre-programmed, too wedded to a certain idea of what they were supposed to be doing. And subsequent to that, from the games in South Africa where we were vibrant and attacking all the way through the November, it's almost as if there was some kind of change in mindset. And I don't know if it was because there was a change in the coaching staff. I don't know if it's because by his own standards it wasn't a successful Six Nations, even though he said, I'd say 3 wins is about right for us.
2 wins and a draw, wasn't it? And you're talking very fine margins. That Paris game away from home should never have been lost, and had they won that, you then would have been looking at 7 points in the championship, second place, and the inquest afterwards wouldn't have been nearly as critical.
Yeah.
That being said, I do think there was something happened to liberate them a little bit on the South African tour. I don't think you can attribute that just to the emergence of a new defensive coach, brilliant defensive coach though he is, because he is a defensive coach, but maybe that had some effect on it as well, a fresh voice. Paddy Jackson being handed the reins, a lot of the young players coming in South Africa, the epic scale of that first win with 14 men in Cape Town, but it's carried through certainly. And I think they came into the Chicago game knowing they just had to play and had to be incredibly positive. And you think of Rory Best's decision making that day and going to the corner. I think three of their tries emanated from turning down kicks at goal to go up the line and maintain the pressure. Yeah. This was, and I think, yeah, when you're adding players into that mix, we have to add in Rory Best. What a year he's had, and of course Jack McGrath too,
and Tadhg Furlong,
and Tadhg Furlong as well.
He comes from nowhere, really.
Yes, like, and is now a Lions contender. Yeah,
in a way, Keith, that the Tadhg Furlong kind of encapsulates a bit of what I'm talking about. It's that all of a sudden we're not reliant on somebody who's been there for 10 years, and there's like, because of the injuries, we've been forced into selecting a bunch of new players, and maybe you can't be as pre-programmed when, I don't know, maybe that whole pre-programmed stuff was all nonsense, and it's just that there are better players playing better because they've had more time together, and there was a post-World Cup hangover. But so putting all that in context, what is the reason why the Six Nations now at this remove was as difficult as it was for us?
I thought we were a bit too pre-programmed. I thought we were almost entirely focused around Johnny Sexton to control the game. Johnny with a little bit from Conor Murray, and much more of a kicking game than we still kick the ball. And we know, and we talk all the time, that New Zealand kicked the ball more than any other team. We still kicked the ball plenty, but we kicked it more. It felt like more, even if it wasn't. Partly because we seemed to play a little bit narrower. We weren't passing it out to the wings anywhere near as much as we are now. We weren't attacking that space. And I also think Johnny was being targeted a lot. And because he was being targeted, he was getting miserable. But it was also putting pressure on our game plan that revolved around him. And what we did see in the summer was... a guy who has grown under the tutelage of his scrum half beside him in Paddy Jackson, and over 3 or 4 years with Ulster has got the confidence to be able to make decisions without being overly criticised for them, and has grown into the role of a comfortable 10 going onto the international field and not being as pre-programmed, because that's not his game. His level of control is not what Johnny Sexton's is. But partly because it isn't as almost as focused, we seem to be liberated a little bit more, and the players seem to take that on, and suddenly the confidence goes up to offload a little bit more, to attack a little bit in the outside channels, to suddenly see your wingers in the middle of the field looking for ball, because we didn't see that in the Six Nations, and we did see it in the summer, and we have seen it in the autumn. And I think it's a bit of a shock to the system that actually you can have a guy that isn't as masterful in control as Johnny Sexton is and win a match in South Africa. And it sometimes just takes a step. It doesn't mean that Paddy's better than Johnny, and it's not that sort of an idea, but it's an idea that different ways work at different times, and you need to have more. And if we're to be honest, we had a huge injury list for Six Nations and World Cup, and whether it was the style we were playing or whatever, but we were getting broken and beaten down. We've been pretty good since then.
Yeah, I would mention the last two games of Six Nations. I know they were home to only Italy and Scotland, but there was some fantastic rugby played in those two matches. A lot of great tries, including the try of the season,
yeah,
which came from Johnny Sexton doing an attacking loop inside his own 22 and rejoining the movement for a third time. Something he does better than any other half in the world. Well, maybe except for Bowden Barrett, but he's really good at staying involved in a move, unusually for an out half. And of course, Simon Zeebo from fullback throwing in that wonderful offload. And Jarrod Payne doing the same in Cape Town to Andrew Trimble in the build-up to Conor Murray's try, which effectively won the match. So I think Rob Kearney has responded to things that Simon Zeebo and Jarrod Payne have done from full-back. And now that he's healthy again, touch wood, most of the time when he is healthy, he's playing great rugby again. And I think, you know, Payne at full-back and to a degree Zeebo at full-back added another little bit of an attacking dimension as well.
Yeah. So...
in the outside channels, and they were used in that regard, and I think it's just that Ireland have evolved in that way now and are doing it a bit more.
So it's not a systemic thing, it's not a kind of sudden awakening from Joe Schmidt. It's
don't
more
think
that there
so,
are
no.
players available.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I still think that Six Nations wasn't quite as bad as everybody makes out. You know, Ireland can't win the Six Nations every year.
No, of course, but it's just the what they were trying to do versus what a similarly injury ravaged team in South Africa tried to do.
Yeah,
seems
yeah.
like chalk and cheese, and like.
I think we've short memories though. I just think if you think back, that first 30-35 minutes against Wales was stupendous. It was brilliant. And Wales are a damn good side, and we're a good side that day, and it was just a hard edged draw in the end. I think conditions in Paris were atrocious. The referee wasn't great. Johnny got targeted, blah blah blah. But Ireland should have won that game, you know. Losing to England away, there's no great shame in that now when you look at it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So all in all, it's been a year of pretty clear progress.
huge progress. When you think where we were this time a year ago, the World Cup hangover, virtually every team out of contention in Europe in the Champions Cup anyway, but only Ulster having a slim chance, all been beaten out the gate, suffering bonus points defeats to English teams. Where we are a year on, with all four still in contention, a good chance of two, maybe even three, making the last eight, and a revival indeed from the Pro 12 with Glasgow there as well. I think you'd have to think that the World Cup hit the Celtic nations harder than the English and the French, for that matter.
Yeah, Keith, last words on this to you. I mean, obviously, the entire year is overshadowed by the passing of a titan from Irish rugby, and it kind of, you know, it's hard at this time of the year to talk about the progress we've made without also just remembering that things changed in Munster for whatever reason in the immediate aftermath of Anthony Foley's passing. The team has kind of found its identity again, and they're obviously leaning on that emotion quite significantly.
There is, and at times when we start talking about, well, talking about Anthony, I would guess a little, still very emotional in relation to it, and I think rugby kind of pales into significance in a lot of cases. And yet, when I would look back on Anthony's passing and the things that would have happened in Iran then, and I do think the reaction of Munster is a sort of tribute that he would like himself, that this is a sort of thing that he would get pleasure in and joy in. But I also remember the number 8 in Soldiers Field.
Yeah, I was going to say that
there's something incredible.
That was classy, wasn't it?
Yeah, poignant and right, and you know, there was something, there was just something incredible about that. But I will say as well, in around the funeral and the days before the funeral and the Thursday for the removal, watching the rugby community blending with the community of Killaloe and all the other people that knew Anthony, which and there was a lovely blend of different groups of people, which was lovely. But from a rugby perspective, because we're on the rugby show, watching the players from all the years of the teams that Anthony had been involved in or that he had touched, or there was an association or whatever, and recognising and seeing all the faces coming up the hill and coming down the street at different times, and kind of seeing how that level of loss was shared by a whole community over the ages, and it was, because there were friends of his father who played for Ireland in the 70s and 80s. There were friends that Anthony had played with in school, to colleges, to Munster, Shannon, to Ireland, to all those teams that he played with. There was something incredible about that now, and that for me would be my memory of 2016, was, yes, the unbelievable sadness for the passing of Anthony, but also the sense that that the community of rugby came together a bit more.
Lads, happy Christmas to both of you.
And to you, Ger, and to you, Keith.
Enjoy, and we'll see you in the new year. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, James.
Cheers.
Off the Ball with BetDAC.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sports 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.